Devil is in the details, isn't he?
Yes, the name of this episode is The Devil is in the Details. I named it first, and then I saw the movie Hannah and found that clip. I thought that was serendipity. If you're going to do a show and wanted to find references to the devil on TV and in movies, you might be surprised how often it happens. Most of these are from sayings that have been passed down as proverbs. Speak of the devil is one. It's shortened from speak of the devil and he appears, which has always obviously been a joke, because if you believed a demon would show up, why would you make a saying like that? The act of warning someone about evil would bring the evil. No one's going to thank you. Oh, thanks for speaking of the devil again, asshat. We won't be talking about the devil so much, so don't worry. But we might get into some details. For a long time now, I've been considering how I could improve the show. And so I thought I would go to the person who's made it her life's work to perfect me as a person and have her train her gaze onto this, my little internet radio show. So I asked number 11 what was wrong with Rotcast. And I ask her not to play favorites, pull any punches, just give it to me straight.
The sound is bad. It isn't consistent. Not enough original fun. Can't keep to a schedule. Reviews are redundant. Not enough original fun.
Ouch. No, really, thank you, number 11. But in my defense, when it comes to wine, we don't know enough to be snotty about it. We haven't gotten close to a comfort zone yet, so the show can always find its forte. Okay, so this is the last show in the Series 2, and so let's talk a little bit about what's on the horizon in Series 3. You definitely will recognize Rotcast heading into its third series. It won't change radically. The next 10 shows will be inspired by 10 pieces of literature that have been turned into movies. My original intention was to use only classic examples of English literature, but researching these stories, I noted that they were long and they didn't have any hook for me. So the list evolved to contain stories that did have something for me. I also watched the page count carefully. For example, Moby Dick was on the list. I remember not getting through that book in college, and at the time I was disappointed with myself. I remembered those endless onion skin pages, the words showing through from both sides. I wasn't able to discuss the book in class. The discussion, if I remember correctly, wasn't much anyway. That's a bad memory. Moby Dick came off the list. Some of these books on the list I'm rereading. I enjoyed them before, but never compared the story and the screenplay. Some of the stories I've never read, but the films are old friends. The titles of all the episodes in the series will be posted at the V-Nostalgia blog. Because of the quiz element of the show, we can't give away what the shows will cover. Plus, many of the wines have not yet been selected. So we'll be back right after this.
I don't make things happen. doesn't work like that. I only set the stage. You pull your own strings. Who are you? Oh, I have so many names.
I'm the devil. Satan, Lucifer, Beelzebub, the Prince of Darkness.
What am I doing here?
It seems you made a deal with the devil. I'm afraid your bill has come due.
Would you be willing to make a deal?
Name your price.
Oh. I'll take... your soul.
Coming up next, The Juicy Truth with Number 11 and Rotwang.
This is the review for Casillero del Diablo by Concha y Toro Winery, or Shell and Bull. The night we recorded the Casillero del Diablo review was a big wine night. Number 11, number 9, M24, and myself went out to a restaurant which featured wine flights. We took two flights for all the reds they had to offer. They served six glasses per flight and served them at our table, each glass resting on a paper slip that contained the wine name and brief description. As we all drank from the community glasses, we marked down our initials beside the wines we favored. One of the glasses held our old nemesis, La Crema Pino. I still don't think it's very good, but I did enjoy a new red blend called Ménage à Trois. The description claimed the wine had a caramel scent, and I was surprised that I actually detected the caramel. I've purchased many bottles since. Back to the big wine night. After we returned to M24's digs, we reviewed the Black Cat Riesling that you heard in the last episode, show 19, and after that we reviewed the Casillero del Diablo. Needless to say, we were feeling fine. Unfortunately, the Diablo recording is pretty rubbish, and the girls haven't gotten into the habit of holding the microphone close to their face. We were all slurring our words, and as I listened back to the recording, I realized I didn't want to have to cut it. So I'm going to break the review down for you and just drop in some moments from the real recording. First of all, we launched into a discussion of how we were going to organize the nine categories that we break the wine into. Why would we do that? No reason. I joked that we should combine the first two, color and clarity, into one category called Cluller. I reasoned that these two categories are usually given 10 points automatically. That shows you the drunken mood we were in. Later on, M24 stated that we should include a new category for presentation.
Well, I mean, people put a lot of effort into the labels. Well, some people do. But I mean, this, you know,
most people buy wine for the label.
We already do discuss the label, but from now on, we will include the website, if any, as part of the review. This wine, the Casillero del Diablo, is a good wine to start that tradition. The website address will be in the show notes. We agreed that the label for the Diablo Carmenere was boring, but the little red foil wrapper at the top of the bottle is stamped with a devil's face, and it looks really cool. It would be easy to find sticking out of a wine cooler or wine rack. We gave the Diablo 10 points for color. It was purplish more than red and very dark. We waited until the end of the bottle to confirm the clarity.
We haven't gotten to the end of the bottle, so we don't know what's down there. Well, since Rotwang's glass is completely clear at this point.
No sediments.
It seems like it should get good points.
This Diablo is from Chile and is made with 85% Carmenere grapes and 15% Cabernet grapes. We discussed what the ideal body of a Carmenere wine should be.
Well, Carmeneres are a lot like cabs, so that's definitely a full-bodied wine. But the fact that it sticks to the glass and that we can't really see through it, it seems very characteristic of its varietal.
And we gave the body 9 points. The aroma was very faint. We drank it as soon as we opened the bottle. This was a problem for my nose. The alcohol hadn't had time to evaporate away. But the girls could smell some aromas.
But when I first took in the aroma, it didn't have a very strong aroma. So then I tasted it, and now it's got a stronger aroma. So I think you have to smell it, drink it, and then smell it again.
What about charcoal? An autumn bonfire? I do agree that there's not that much there, but no. We did drink it right after we opened it, so...
The taste was slightly easier to talk about. I noticed the tannins, and number 9 echoed my feelings about the nature of those tannins.
I think it's a little rough and gritty. Like you said, a lot of tannins in it. This is definitely not as smooth as some of the other Carmenere varietals that I've had, so... It almost reminds me more of a Shiraz, the way it's so peppery and rough tasting. There's some spice to it. That's maybe part of the woodsiness that you were talking about.
Number 9 felt that the wine was definitely matured in oak barrels, and I went on to guess that those barrels were American oak.
But I'm wondering if it is an American oak or French oak. And since we're saying this is rough, and the American oak is supposed to be create a more harsh flavored wine, I'm guessing it's an American oak.
The Diablo website confirmed both notions. The wine was aged for 8 months in American oak. We gave the taste score 7 points. We disagreed widely about the complexity. Here I want to introduce a wine buying aid that I received with my subscription to the magazine Wine Enthusiast. On page 38 and 39 of their 2012 January-February issue, they have printed a vintage chart. From this chart, I can find Chilean wines from the Colchagua region, which would include this Diablo Carmenere, and for this 2010 vintage, the chart puts the wine in the category of you can drink it, but it might not be at its peak. The chart suggests holding the wine for another 6 months to a year might place it squarely into its maturity. Holding it longer, the chart also suggests, would put it in danger of quickly turning bad. While some wines grow more complex in maturity, this wine probably doesn't have a wide window. That being said, the chart is only guesswork by the magazine's wine tasting experts. Take from that what you will. I thought that while the wine had good structure, the taste and smell were vague. Number 9 disagreed.
We picked out some things, more than one. Autumn leaves, right? And
pepper
and the oak, so that's a couple things that's got going on. Maybe not the most, but we've had worse.
Worse an hour ago.
So it could even improve a little bit.
Yeah, I think it would.
Well, I'll say 7, to split the difference.
There was only agreement around the table for the acid balance in the wine. We thought the wine had just the right pH, a slightly acidic red. We gave it 9 points. The alcohol to flavor balance was good. This wine has 13.5% alcohol, and the flavor supported that easily, even though we drank it a little fast after opening the bottle. And we gave it full marks. The price for this bottle of Diablo is between $8 and $11. Anything less than $10 and that we would drink again receives 10 points. I have already purchased this wine again. The final score was 87 points. And as a big finale, M24 acted as a translator for this review, with a little help from the internet.
To keep thieves away from his special private reserve, he spread the rumor that the devil lived in the cellar, hence the name of Casillero del Diablo, the devil's cellar. Wait, hence the name, Casillero del Diablo, the devil's writing desk.
What would be in the devil's writing desk? Maybe a to-do list? I'm thinking stoking the lake of fire would be on the list. Buy up the last Twinkies for end of days. Maybe invent a new temptation, something along the lines of Angry Birds or Farmville. Hey, number nine, do you own a mammoth fur bikini?
Why, yes I do, but it's at the cleaners. I doubt it would fit you, though.
Let's see, I've got my stone spears, dinosaur repellent, pterodactyl net.
Why are you packing all that weird stuff?
Oh, I'm getting ready for the Monster Bash.
You mean the one Creepy Classics and Scary Monsters is holding?
Is there another one? I'm going to Butler, PA next summer, and I'm going to be prepared. Elephant gun?
I think you're over-preparing. It isn't until June.
Yeah, June 22nd through 24th, but I've never... It's getting closer.
Where did that come from? Don't move! It can't see you if you don't move.
Are you serious? It's looking right at me.
Yeah, trust me. It can't see you if you remain completely motionless. I saw that in a movie.
You mean a movie like the ones they show at the International Classic Monster Film Festival and Expo? I can't. I've gotta... No! Stop!
I told him not to move. The Monster Bash is June 22nd through 24th. You can register online at www.creepyclassics.com or call 724-238-4317. I've got my stone spears, my pterodactyl net, elephant gun. What else do I need?
Hi, this is Ron Adams. I am the program director, mastermind, mad doctor of Monster Bash, the conference in Pittsburgh, and you're listening to Rotcast, the sound of V-Nostalgia.
Remember this clip from the last show?
In the East, the Far East, when a person is sentenced to death, they're sent to a place where they can't escape.
Never knowing when an executioner may step up behind them
and fire a bullet into the back of their head.
The answer to the chapter and verse for episode 19 is Lost Highway. Directed by David Lynch. It was released in 1997 and was rated R. I must have seen his Eraserhead at a festival or at college. It was one of Lynch's first films and it certainly made an impression. I remember nervously laughing at scenes in the film and being disgusted by others. Parts of the film gave me the willies. I could describe scenes from Eraserhead even now, even though I've not seen it again and never wanted to. Eraserhead bored into my brain. It's kind of amazing. Another thing Eraserhead did was put David Lynch on my radar. I think our friend M24, a sometime wine reviewer on this podcast, is a fan of his work. At least she appreciates his most unusual TV series, Twin Peaks. I watched many episodes of that show, but not all. Sporadic would be how you would characterize my interest. I've been curious enough to see many of Lynch's films, but I usually wait to hear the reviews too. But let's talk about Lost Highway. I had never seen Lost Highway until I used it for Rotcast 19. I was looking for a modern film that had some qualities that Edgar Allan Poe's story might, and by following the branching path presented by IMDb, I arrived at Lost Highway. I really enjoyed the movie. It may be my favorite Lynch film. Critically, his Blue Velvet or Mulholland Drive might be his best, but Lost Highway is a little bit simpler, and the music and the strange humor appealed to me. It also has elements of film noir, with Patricia Arquette as the femme fatale. The way the main characters change into completely different people mid-movie is similar in both Lost Highway and Mulholland Drive. The inexplicable slice out of a fuller story is similar in its way to what Poe does with his narratives. Oftentimes in Poe, you have no idea of the backstory or motivations for a character's actions. Instead of this making the story confusing, it makes even a simple story more mysterious and forces you to identify with the protagonist, right or wrong. One other thing I like in the film is the casting of Natasha Gregson Wagner. I've probably seen this actress in other things, but watching her scenes in Lost Highway, I was reminded of Rebel Without a Cause. Later, I discovered she's Natalie Wood's daughter. Wood starred in Rebel, so that makes sense. Now it's time for the chapter and verse description for episode 20. This is chapter 5, and it's called Symbol of Truth. It's 3 minutes and 38 seconds in length. The film was released in 1987, and it's rated R for nudity and violence, and it has something to do with the devil. The scene starts with a view out of a glass storefront. A figure in a trench coat enters and pauses to adjust his belt. Behind his head on the wall is an oscillating fan. On the soundtrack, we hear Italian singing. We're in a small restaurant. All the tables are empty but one. The tables are covered in white tablecloths. In the far back of the room sits a man in a dark suit. He sips at a small coffee cup. We'll call the man in the trench coat JF. JF sits across from the man in the dark suit. We'll call this man Louis. Louis makes quite an impression. He has a heavy black beard and mustache. His hair is pulled back tight to his head in a small ponytail. But the strangest part of his appearance are his fingernails. They're long and sculpted like a woman's. JF starts the conversation, and we look over his shoulder at Louis's reaction. JF leans into the table to make his strange report. Louis continues to drink his coffee. His eyebrows raise as JF tells him that he's had no luck tracking down the missing person Louis has hired him to find. Louis calmly states that the missing man must have found the perfect disappearing act. He goes on to compare the missing man to a slug. Louis assures JF that he will find the man because he will be able to follow the slime trail. Between the two on the table is a footed bowl containing 3 large white eggs. There's a close-up of Louis's hand picking up an egg and holding it with his extended fingernails. He turns the egg in his hand as though he's feeling for a particular spot on the egg. He stares at JF as he hits the end of the egg on the plate in front of him. There's another close-up of Louis using the flat of his hand to roll and press the egg across the plate. We hear the hard-boiled egg shell crack and separate from the egg. On Louis's finger is a ring. The ring is a stone inlaid with a five-pointed star. JF has been leaning back in his chair, listening to Louis, but he now leans in and quickly disagrees that he will find the man. He explains the last lead that he interviewed has turned up dead, and he wants no more to do with the case. Louis asks JF if he killed the man he questioned. JF explains he didn't, but the police might make that assumption. Louis slowly peels the shell away from the hard-boiled egg. He says he will increase JF's finder fee to $5,000. We hear pieces of the shell hit the plate slowly, piece by piece, like coins dropping onto a weigh scale. JF is duly impressed by the figure. He leans back to consider the new offer. Louis says,
"You know, some religions think that the egg is the symbol of the soul. Did you know that?"
"No, I didn't know that."
"Would you like an egg?"
"No, thank you. I got a thing about chickens."
Louis salts the egg, blowing the excess salt away, and then offers an egg to JF. JF declines the proffered egg, but superstitiously picks up a little of the spilt salt and tosses it over his left shoulder. Then Louis stuffs the egg into his mouth and bites it in half with his teeth. He stares at JF as he chews. This action is shot in slow motion. JF stares back. That's the end of the chapter. Do you know the movie? Hear the answer in episode 21.
From the pen of William Yortzberg, author of Falling Angel and Legend, comes a new occult mystery. He was Houdini, the world-renowned magician.
Ladies and gentlemen, people say I made an 8,000-pound pachyderm disappear last week from the Hippodrome. But that's just hooey. The beast was 10,000 pounds.
He was Doyle, who gave the world its most celebrated detective.
I'm keenly aware, sir, that I'm not Sherlock Holmes, but it's safe to say I know his methods.
They had one thing in common.
Listen, there's no such thing as ghosts. It's all bunkum. And I'm the guy who can prove it.
Spirits have communicated across this veil of tears, and I am a witness.
Together they'll bring to justice the most macabre killer in the history of old New York.
If you're asking me, it was the Edgar Allan Poe killer.
Listen, Doyle, we can't lose our heads. The Poe killer doesn't realize you're not dead. We should keep it that way. Cancel your tour, drop out of sight, tell no one.
But this is impossible. There is my family to consider. I will not allow them to grieve for an instant without cause.
Will Houdini and Doyle bring the mad murders to an end? Or will there be one more? Nevermore.
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 Ten Horned Devil by Venus Throw, available from cdbaby.com.